Well, good morning, friends, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you big book study. My name is Kelly S., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Today is Tuesday, January 21st, 2025, and this is the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Vision for You meeting. Today, we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are in Into Action. We're on page 73, second paragraph, says, the inconsistency is made worse by, through that one paragraph ending with, that makes worse for more drinking, commenting on that one paragraph. So today's readers are 12 Steps, Herbert F., 12 Traditions, Barbara P., Ashley F. is reading the text, and Rena L. will be reading page 164. Our newcomer greeter is Loretta M., and our second hour host is Eileen M. So the reference number for yesterday, Monday, January 20th, 2025, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time is 22092, and the 10 a.m. Eastern Time was 22093. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of overeaters, of OA, sorry, can't talk, of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, quote, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers, end quote. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I'll now have Herbert F. read the 12 steps of OA. Hey, good morning, Herbert.
Good morning, I'm Herbert F., and these are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, prayed only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me serve.
Well, thank you so much, Herbert F. And now I will have Barbara P. read the 12 traditions of OA. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Barbara P., compulsive overeater from Georgia. The 12 traditions of OA. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks, I'll pass.
Well, thanks, Barbara P. Okay, so here's how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then we'll stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we do ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature that we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no absence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. So to share, you'll press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. Have a quiet meeting. Everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Okay, so today we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are in Into Action. We are on page 73. We're in the second paragraph. It starts, the inconsistency is made worse by, reading through that one paragraph, ending with, that makes for more drinking, and commenting on that one paragraph. And Ashley F. is going to get us started. Hey, good morning, Ashley.
Good morning, Kelly. Ashley F., recovered compulsive overeater in Kentucky. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his spree. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. This certainly describes my experience in when I'm in compulsive overeating. But what's noteworthy to me is that even when I'm not on a spree. So this first sentence where it says that inconsistency between who I know I am and who I am performing and presenting myself to be in front of. It's made worse by things I do on my spree. So it's present anyway, but my sprees just fuel it. Come into my senses, and then the revulsion at myself points to, for me, like as we're in this fifth step section, I really could not even imagine how, if I am that revolted at myself, how sharing that with someone else was in any way going to be safe. I thought, if I'm that revolted, what are they going to think? The memories are a nightmare. And then this sentence about he trembles to think someone might have observed him. And again, this is speaking to me to what I came to understand as a real underlying part of my illness is that I'm so focused on what you think about me, which is, selfish, self-centered fear, that I can't even function appropriately under constant fear and tension. And of course, that makes for more compulsive eating for me. So I certainly would wake up and think, how did that even happen? And by wake up, I mean at the end of a spree. I got drunk on emotions and thinking long before I ever picked up the first compulsive bite. And I in a spree, the things I would wake up to are not doing my job. So I would show up and cash that check, but not actually do what I'm getting paid to do while I'm there. Yelling at my daughter, shutting down and running away from jobs and marriages and responsibilities, or staying and pretending that everything's great, but letting everything I'm actually responsible for pile up, and all the while running to the food and every opportunity I had at that moment. I remember thinking when I prepared for my first, to share my first fourth step that I wrote, I remember afterwards thinking, like, I was surprised she didn't, like, burst into flames. At that point, I had no God. I had no sense of self. And the steps are written
that
we
time,
admit to
Ashley.
God. Thank you. That we admit to God, then ourselves, then another human being. I didn't have that. So my whole everything was built around what does somebody else think of me? And it fueled all of this. But I have to be willing to let this be seen to get well and stay well. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you so much, Ashley F., for getting us started. Okay, guys, so I'm going to open the meeting for sharing. And although we do value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others can share their experiences too. So that means if you shared yesterday or last Friday on any of the vision meetings, please allow others the opportunity to share today. And please keep your share to 3 minutes. Please give me your first name, initial of your last, and where you're calling from. I'm ready.
Christina.
This is Wendy.
Erin K., Michigan.
Christina J.
All
Roz G.
Okay, Christina J., Erin K., Roz G. That's all I got.
Tony B.
Wendy F.
Wendy F.
S. Like S. Sam.
Oh, S.
Mm-hmm. Reva P.
Reva P.
Kelly H.
Stephanie.
Kelly
H. H.
Stephanie. Gotcha, Kelly.
Thanks.
Stephanie.
Oh. Thank you.
Ian F.
I heard Chris. Oh, hi, Ian. Ian F. Here's who I heard. Christina, Aaron, Roz, Tony, Wendy, Reva, Kelly, Stephanie, and Ian. Did I miss anybody? All right. Well, let's get started. Everybody, please press star one so we'll have a nice quiet meeting. Remember to tell me where you're calling from so we can find you on the member list. And we will start with Christina J. followed by Erin K. Hey, good morning, Christina. You're up.
Hey, Kelly. One, Christina J. in North Carolina. And wow, what a paragraph that really describes how we felt, or at least how I felt. And as I reflect on this, I think about not only the food episodes, but my emotional episodes that were driven by my fears. And, you know, until I did this program, I continued to live in those fears, and they're still there. I still find myself deeply ashamed when I've gotten into relapse and stolen food and tried to hide. Some of my biggest shames have been walking around in fat clothes, trying to act like I'm okay. That's so stressful. So stressful for me. I could never accept that being heavy was okay. We live in a society now where it seems like it's okay to be heavy, but for me, that's not healthy. So I did so many emotional things during my disease because I just couldn't let you know that I did something wrong. I wrecked someone's car. I didn't tell them I did it. I had affairs. I didn't tell them I did it. I got caught, still made up huge lies around those things, and finally had to come to the table with it. I mean, I have done so many things that are outrageous, and this program allows me to be honest, not be ashamed, to lay those down on paper and forgive myself because I was ignorant. I was desperate for love, was living in fear, and today I love myself. I still do things out of my disease process that I'm working on healing. But I love myself. And for my family, I'm breaking the chain. I'm breaking the chain because all of my family is addicted to something. And just asking for prayers this morning, my mother is in critical condition in the hospital. and she never got a chance to do this work. The last thing she said to me was, can you send me a copy of that AA 12 and 12? And I did, and she's not been well enough to even open the package. So many prayers for her as God, it's God's will, whatever happens. And if she gets to surrender, then that's God's will, and she won't have to live in pain anymore. So this is a beautiful process. Take the steps, get healed, get free. Get free and walk in love and peace, because that's our birthright. Joy, love, and peace in this program is free, and it allows you to do this. Don't be afraid, and if so, do it scared. Love you all. I pass.
Well, thank you so much, Christina J. from North Carolina. Prayers with you and your mom. All right, next up, Aaron K., followed by Roz G. Hey, good morning, Aaron.
Morning, Kelly. Thank you for leading the charge here. Aaron K., compulsive overeater in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I woke up this morning after a total emotional binge last night, like screaming at my husband, the total drama llama, and it just kind of blindsided me. It seemed to come out of nowhere. And, you know, I'm so grateful I haven't had to wake up from a really big, bad, nasty food binge in a few years now. But I definitely still have these emotional binges sometimes. And if I give in to this emotional binge without then cleaning it up, I do live under constant fear and tension that will drive me to maybe not dive into the food, dramatically, but to use food to sate those fears. And I know that I cannot use food to do that in any way. And I thank God that I have a spiritual mop and bucket in these steps, especially step 10. And it occurred to me, like, as I was looking at this morning, that prayer is the ultimate stain remover. But it's like I have to drop myself off at the cleaners, and I'm going to have some faith that I won't, shrink or turn pink in the wash. And, even though I'm mixing my metaphors, I think the best analogy is that, God has given me the broom, but I have to pick it up and use it. And so, I commit to that 10th step this morning, everybody. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks, Kelly.
Well, thanks so much, Aaron K. from Michigan. Next up, we have Roz G., followed by Tony B. Hey, good morning, Roz.
Good morning, Kelly. Thank you for your service. And this is Roz G. in Los Angeles, or, Palmdale, but I'm in the county of Los Angeles. And I was thinking about when I heard the reader, and I was like, what is this saying to me today? Well, it's saying to me that in the past, when I was compulsive overeating, I had like maybe one or two of those blackouts. But most of the time, I didn't. I knew what I was doing. But compulsive overeating and eating foods that give me, high, or when I'm seeking the effect in certain foods, it messes with my personality. And I go to a place that's not pleasant. And I have been, in the past, unfriendly, unapproachable, and hard. And as I grow older, I can look back and see how I was in the past. And I don't want to let, overeating and, as I heard and shared, emotional binges rule my life today. And what I did, and of course, when I realize that I treated somebody terribly, that I said something terribly to somebody, was just rude or unkind. I couldn't stand how that made me feel, and I wanted to eat some more so that I would escape from those feelings. And today, I do not want to let those actions rule my life anymore. Today, I have neutrality one day at a time. Thank you, God. Thank you by the mercy and grace of God. I have neutrality towards the food. And so today, I want to make sure that I'm treating everyone with love and respect. And I'm not perfect, and it's not always going to happen, but I want to be that way. And I just last night, I discovered I was in the bathroom brushing my teeth, getting ready for bed, and I stepped in something moist on the floor, and I'm like, what the heck is this? And I may have a slab leak, and I've had one before. I've had two, actually. My house was built in the 90s. I don't want to get angry about it. What do I have to be thankful for? I have homeowner's insurance. All I have to do is call the homeowner's insurance, you know, later on in the morning and have somebody come look at it. I don't have to get pissed off. I don't have to feel sorry for myself. I can be thankful that Overeaters Anonymous,
that's time, Ross.
I'll wrap up by saying, over the years has given me a responsible life and direction, do the next right thing. Call somebody. Don't get angry about it. And just move on with your life in gratitude. Thank you, and I pass.
Well, thank you so much, Raj G. from California. Next up, we have Tony B., followed by Wendy S. Hey, good morning, Tony.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you for your service. My name's Tony B. I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Scotland. So wonderful to be on this line. And great paragraph. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Well, I was thinking the things I didn't do on my sprees, my binge eating sprees, not helping, not cooking. I would get home, buy something on the way home, be on the sofa eating it. My husband would come in, nothing for him to eat. Not clearing up, not working, not going out, not exercising, not meeting friends or keeping in touch with friends. Feeling hopeless and useless and full of fear and full of shame, desperate and depressed. Mentally ill, really, anxious, and with this sense of impending doom. And these feelings, from anger and sulking and shouting and hitting out and crying in an uncontrollable and inconsolable manner, and putting that on my husband, the nearest to me, the demanding tended to go on him as well. Although sometimes hysteria was there around my parents and brother as well, to be fair. The demanding, get me more food, comfort me, help me, help me. Say, well, help me. It's just this feeling that I had, that this desperation, and do things for me, you know, the demanding. Oh my goodness, I'm so grateful that I'm not there anymore. So, yes, certainly inconsistent, because I would patch up, make up, go out, and try to be normal in the everyday world. And of course, that just led to more eating. And we're talking about step five here. And, you know, I told people about quite a lot of my stuff, you know, at various times in my life. But it never stuck. You know, I couldn't see it through. And the difference here and this time and in this meeting and with you fellows is that I've recognized that the work is continuous and constant, and that I must pass it on. So with that, I will share the time. Thanks so much for letting me share, and I love you all. Bye now.
Well, thank you so much, Tony B. from Scotland. So next up, we have Wendy S., followed by Reva P. Hey, good morning, Wendy. Let me know where you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Wendy, and I'm calling from the Boston, Massachusetts area this morning. I'm gratefully abstinent. I have 16 months of back-to-back abstinence, and it's difficult. What I was thinking mostly when everyone was sharing and when you read the when the reading was read about powerlessness and how that's what I really, that was the key for me to stop eating compulsively when I realized the first three steps. I really got it. I was in a food addiction treatment, to be unnamed, but I really, you know, did some very deep work and really got it. So if I go to the grocery store, I noticed, and it made me sad actually, the aisles upon aisles of processed foods. Even I saw things that as a child I used to eat. My mother was very controlling with me and herself around the food. When we had something to eat, sweet, I got a baby spoon and so did she. And I didn't think that was weird till, you know, later in life. And it's just, I knew that there was something wrong inside of me since I was a child. I mean, I was very shy and I was a highly sensitive little girl. And I just needed my mommy so much, but my mom was narcissistic and cold. And I didn't know she was such a narcissist, but she was really emotionally unavailable to me. And I was yearning for that closeness. So I suppose I did find food, because food comforted me and it relaxed me, but I didn't know it was like a drug. In like grade school, I remember being so scared and shy around other children, and I looked forward to cafeteria and I looked forward to what my mother put in the paper bag for lunch, and that comforted me. No, I didn't know why, but there was so much restriction around food in the house. My mother hid everything, but I'd go in the hiding places and, you know, rearrange things, the little that we had, but I used to babysit. And then if they said, oh, help yourself. One time I babysat and I helped myself to like everything. And I was like, oh no, they're going to notice. And maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but I rearranged everything. And I was very excited when they, you know, they would put out something X, Y, or Z and I could get into it. All this like, oh my God, I don't want to eat it all because what will they think, and so on. And I was in so much denial about how heavy I was. I mean, I recently looked through pictures and I'm like, that's me? Because I've lost a tremendous amount of weight in the last 16 months. Thing is, I'm a little older now than when I first was abstinent for 4 months in my 20s. So I'm having trouble accepting the sags in my skin. And it's just hard.
That's time, Wendy.
Okay, so I'll wrap up and say that I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be abstinent. And it's not easy. I'm going through a lot. And I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Wendy S. from Massachusetts. All right, next up we have Reva P. followed by Kelly H. Hey, good morning, Reva.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Toronto. You know, what struck me in this paragraph the most is being under constant fear and tension. So it brought back memories of, you know, being in the food, and the paragraph above talks about the double life. I so relate. And inconsistencies, you know, my eating wasn't, I wasn't a grazer. It was like explosive. It was like total binging on thousands and thousands of calories and then trying to starve. So it was like an EKG, up, down, totally inconsistent. But the fear and tension, you know, trying to manage the double life, the Jekyll and Hyde, trying to, quote, keep it together and have everybody think that I'm doing fine. And the only person I was fooling, the only person I was trying to convince that all is fine, the only one I was hiding stuff from was mainly me. Me. You know, I had this thing, if I didn't look at my body from the neck down, then I didn't have to admit that I was seriously either underweight or overweight. I don't look at it, it's not there, haha. Like, how did that work for you, Reva? And it was so stressful. It was so stressful being like these two different kinds of people. And I have to say, one of the miracles of the program, by, you know, putting the food down and working the steps, I'm the same person. I'm the same person everywhere. And it's so much less stressful. I don't have to like do this inconsistency double life. And, you know, shoving it down, hoping that things don't see the light of day, that was the miracle of step five. You know, getting a recovered person who did what I did, who had a lot of similar things and say, yeah, I did that too. You know, I wasn't so unique. And getting it all out, you know, instead of hiding myself, hiding all the things I did, hiding all the thoughts that I didn't even know were there. I didn't know how angry and resentful I was, how fearful I was. It's so stressful. So today, by working the steps and living in 10, 11, and 12, yeah, I get disturbed, but I don't have to be under constant fear and tension if I do the work. You know, sanity returns. Sanity returns. And no, is it perfect? No, but it reduces. I don't go from like not doing something, you know, from how I was before. It's not black and white. It's sort of, it's reduced in intensity, frequency, and duration. I'm not that explosive, emotional, binger, crazy person. You know, still have more growth, for sure, for sure. But thank you, God, I don't have to live like that anymore. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Rita P. from Toronto, Canada. Before we go into Kelly H., let me just remind you guys where we are, in case you just joined us or forgot, which is what I usually do. We are in the big book, first of all. That's a good start. We are into action, page 73, second paragraph. The inconsistency is made worse by, through that one paragraph ending with, that makes for more drinking. We're commenting on that one paragraph. So next up, we do have Kelly H., followed by Stephanie O. All right, Kelly, you're up.
Good morning. I am from North Carolina this morning and compulsive overeater. This is such a timely read for me personally. It's just so good to remember afresh what the nightmare is like. And in the reading, it was really easy to identify my side of the action of life before I got into this program. My side, my actions and my sprees, my revolting effects, the vague memories, but in moments of clarity, I could catch glimmers. And when I did, it was always a nightmare of what I did. The eating, the spending money I didn't have for years on fast food in the name of hurry, 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 eat quick. And then the car smell afterwards. The only checks and balance that I had in such a state was the shame of being seen. I remember one time driving down the road. I was a teacher at this point, and after school I stopped by a fast food place, and I was eating this enormous thing, literally just shoving it in my face as I was driving down the road. But I was stopped at an intersection, and who did I see right next to me in a car was a teacher I had who had just reviewed my performance in classroom. And I had a lot of fear about her and her thoughts of me. And here she is seeing me covered in the grease of this thing. It was humiliating beyond words. And then I proceeded in this program for another 12 years. So that was one example of just that hidden shame I felt. My own remedy in such a state was pushing the stuff inside of me and then burying it with food. I ate separately from my family. And the result of feeling intention always led to the next binge for me. There are three parts for me in my story that get me out of such a state. One is that I am made to remember and come to hear my story outside of myself. So this chapter, this entire chapter is me. Actually, this whole big book is about me hearing my story over and over again. A weekend, hearing stories from people that my story is being said and spoken outside. And my memory is being triggered and I remember. Two is I am willing to know this God has a rescue plan for me, and that he builds
That's
in me
kind, Kelly.
Freedom, a freedom. So with that, I will pass. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Kelly H. from North Carolina. All right, next up, Stephanie O., followed by Ian F. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, Kelly. Thank you for your service. I'm Stephanie O. from New York, and thank you for everyone who does service on this line. It's such a quiet meeting, and I love that. What's coming up, well, clearly these paragraphs are meaningful to me because they're all highlighted, especially the last sentence of the previous paragraph of leading that double life, and then going into this one, thinking about the remorse and the shame and the guilt and just all of these feelings that come up because I just couldn't stick with it. You know, I've been in program for 25 years, but only found vision in November. And so what came up for me is all of the times I've spent trying to manage my food addiction, right? And this weekend I had time to spend with my family, with my parents, doing some service for them, and with my fiance, just the four of us. And I was able to really get a window into just how crazy I've made everybody with my food plans and weighing food that was not abstinent, excuse me, but because I put it on a scale, I was trying to give the impression that it was something that was on a food plan. I mean, I just think about these things that I've done to try to manage my food, and it's insane. The other thing that came out to me in these readings, is these past two paragraphs, is, you know, that double life. And, you know, my entire life, I say this all the time, I just sought peace at all costs. And I was a child, and still am an adult, who yearns for that attention, affection, and approval. And so what I've done is I've stepped on my fellows and I have, you know, controlled and manipulated situations to present the stage actress and, you know, upset then when you didn't love me. And recently my sponsor pointed out, well, if you're controlling and manipulating and you're presenting a stage actress, what's the use of trying to get them to love that person? It's a lie. That person doesn't exist. And so just be yourself and that's who you really want people to love. And, you know, that's what this disease does. The mental twist that this disease affects me with, the mental illness, I heard someone say that. I totally couldn't agree more. And I'm just so grateful that God sent out that rescue mission for me. And, you know, today I'm hoping to finish up my third step prayers with my sponsor. And tomorrow start my fourth step work. And, you know, today I couldn't be happier because I know that I found something different this time, and the difference is God. The difference is God. He's at the center of it all, not Stephanie. So thank you all. I pass.
Well, thank you so much, Stephanie O. from New York. Next up, we'll have Ian F., and then we'll have time for more shares. Hey, good morning, Ian.
Good morning. This is Ian F., compulsive overeater. I was always a really nervous kid, and I became a nervous adult. And one of the things I'm thinking about as I hear these shares is how I did binge in isolation, absolutely, but a lot of why I binged was because I was afraid of people, and I couldn't go to a party or a social function of any kind or school without eating something to calm me down. And that level of, you know, the food does what alcohol does, it lowers your inhibitions. You know, for the only time that I felt like I was comfortable talking to anybody was when I ate. And so when my inhibitions are lowered and I can just be free and I do things without thinking about them. And as other people shared, I step on people's toes. I'm manipulative. And it's what's crazy is that I always thought of manipulation as being this intentional, malicious thing. And it's not always. A lot of times it's just me. It's what people pleasing is. It's manipulation. And I remember coming home every night when I was in the disease, and praying that hopefully someday somebody was going to love me. And I had this fear that, you know, I'm not really the person that I think that I am. I have all these lofty ideals, but I never live up to them. I'm never selfless, even though I know that's what I should be, you know, all these things. And it's not that I don't believe those things, not that I'm not capable of them. But when I'm in that cycle, I can't reach it. You know, I can't live up to it. And so the beauty of this program is that I'm the same person when I go out as I am when I'm at home. And then I do those things, you know, when I commit a sin or act on a character defect, I get to clean it up and I go right back to God and I go right back to who I actually am. So that's all I got. Love you guys. I'll pass.
Sorry, I'm here having trouble with my phone. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ian F. I think he's from Indiana. All right, so I'm going to open up the floor for more sharing. Again, if you shared yesterday or last Friday on any of our vision meetings, please give others the opportunity. We are on page 73, second paragraph. Who would like to share today?
Chris G.
Rick J.
Where is that? Rick J. There were a couple people at the beginning that was just jumbly. Who was that?
Lisa N.
Who was that?
Chris G. in Tennessee.
Chris G. There was somebody N.
Lisa.
Lisa N. Okay. Got room for a couple more. All right, well, let's go ahead and get started with Rick J. followed by Chris G. Hey, good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Kelly. Thanks so much for your service. My name is Rick J. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina, and I was just thinking about this one line. These memories are a nightmare. And, you know, and then quickly trying to push these memories far inside myself, hoping they will never see the light of day, you know, under constant fear and tension, which makes for more drinking, which makes for more compulsive eating, you know. And, you know, it was, yeah, some of my sprees, you know, the things that I did during my sprees, you know, we all have these memories. But also, the very thing that I was seeking, that ease and comfort from, that you know, that led me back into the food, those same memories become much more clear and defined, and they're back. They're back with me, and so that never goes away. You know, that emotional pain and fill in the blank. You know. But the emotional pain that drove me to the food comes back even more intensely. And so I have nowhere to go except for back into the food. You know, that's part of that vicious cycle for me. And I would try to create an alternate universe that I lived in where those things did not happen, because I couldn't live with them. You know, I was trying to cope, trying to find my way the best I could. But, you know, I mean, it was just this self-destructive cycle. The more I remembered, the more I ate, the more pain I was in, you know, it just never stopped. And I heard one time, you know, that denial, which is what this is, right? When I'm refusing to acknowledge and accept or trying to erase memories that are a part of me. You know, that's a denial not only of a disease, but it's the denial of my reality. And I heard that acronym for denial was "Don't even notice I am lying," and, you know, to myself. And, you know, that pathological lie that I'm trying to live in, which of course, you know, that it does constantly create that fear and that tension and that sense of guilt and shame, you know, and I would continuously have to get away from that. And I am just so grateful that I do not have to be that person today in this moment, living in a new freedom and a new happiness, you know, by just the spiritual actions that we take one day at a time.
That's
they're there. And I'm so grateful, and thanks for being there, everyone. Love you all. I pass.
Well, glad you're here, Rick. Thank you so much. That's Rick J. from North Carolina. Next up, we have Chris G., followed by Lisa N. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, and thank you for letting me share. I do appreciate everybody's share today and listening. But I wanted to say something that I was I was an under-eater, and I was an overeater, and I did both very well. And then I was a yo-yo dieter. And so that's the inconsistency, that I had to buy different clothes, and I looked different. But the consistency was that I was the same. And I never met, or rarely met, an overeater who didn't have self-hatred. And so it's easier for an under-eater to hide the self-hatred. But most overeaters have self-hatred that I've come across. And so that's the consistency. And so the self-hatred is either overeating or under-eating or lying to myself or whatever. But yeah, so the And that's what I wanted to share today. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Chris G. from Tennessee. Next up, we have Lisa N., and then we'll have time for some more shares. Hey, Lisa, where are you calling from?
Hey, good morning, moderator. Thank you so much for taking the meeting. I'm calling from Wisconsin today. And, thank you. I'm so blown away by everybody's share. I can just so relate to everyone. And thank you, everybody, for sharing today. A really powerful meeting. I was inconsistent. My mother pointed that out to me for as long as we were in relationship together, even as a young kid. She would say, "You're so inconsistent." And I knew it wasn't good, but I didn't know what she meant by that. I mean, I knew what the actual word, the definition was. But when she'd say it, it was just like, oh, there she goes again, telling me what I am or what I'm not. And, of course, she could only give what she had. So I understand that she was, you know, pointing out things that bothered her or she was guilty about, felt guilty about. But anyway, I would be that. I was that way. And I could be very nice. And I would, it's that Jekyll Hyde thing. I could bring a cake to work to celebrate my birthday and then say, well, can I take the rest of it home? And somebody said, well, sure, if you want to. And it's like, that's so bizarre. Or eat like a mad woman on the weekend, but then be super restrictive all week. Or, the list goes on. Be nice at home to my kids, a really kind, sweet mother, and then be a crazy lady yelling at them because they're not ready for school in time. The inconsistencies were a pattern throughout my life that I did not recognize. And my mother, like I said, did, but I just tuned her out after a while. And this program helped me tune back in to who I was. And thank goodness, because I needed to see what I was doing, and I didn't. And the only way I could see it was with my higher power's help and this program and my fellows and the 10 steps showing me my patterns. So I'm just very grateful for this program. And if you're a newcomer, stick with it. Don't give up. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa N. from Wisconsin. We do have time for a couple more shares. If you haven't shared in the last 3 days, we'd love to hear from you.
Alexis F.
Kathy J. In.
Jackie J.
Kathy
All right,
J. In.
Okay. All right. Alexis, where are you calling from? You're up.
Alexis F. from New Jersey, East Coast time. I was a screamer with my kids, and my house shook with the way that I screamed. And I would go out, and I would wonder why the neighbors didn't like me, you know, even though they heard me with this terrible loud voice to my kids and this rage that came out of me. And I would be the perfect lady when I went out, very demure, very shy, and everybody thought that we had the perfect family, that everything was okay. I blamed people for everything that I did and everything that I said, everything that I was. It's good to come to a meeting and see that other people are a little bit like me. I did things to extremes. It was very difficult for me to see myself at the time. I ran on emotion. I didn't think about anything. I didn't plan anything. The only thing I could plan was the party because I could manage the food real well and make, you know, a dozen desserts and, you know, a bunch of different food. And that was like, oh, boy, we go to Lexi's house, you know, and you get a French cuisine. And my children were neglected. They were abused and neglected. And I'm not proud of it. I try to hide it most of the time. I have a son in Michigan who doesn't talk to me. And one of the biggest regrets of my life. And I live with my daughter and she takes care of me now. I'm older. And you wouldn't believe what she went through as a kid. I was constantly in hospitals. And, or on the floor after passing out.
That's time, Alexis.
Thank you.
That was Alexis from New Jersey. Thank you so much. All right, next up is it Jackie J? Is that right?
It's Kathy J in Illinois.
Oh, my God, Kathy J from Illinois. You're up. Sorry.
Hi. Thanks. Hi. Hi, everybody. Kathy J, excuse me, compulsive eater in recovered. You know, all these things that that I've heard in the meeting, these things about that I hated about myself when I wasn't abstinent and I was in the food and obese and, you know, I tried so hard to get to love myself as I was, but I wasn't okay the way I was. So it's kind of like all these symptoms. They're symptoms. They aren't who I am. I wasn't who I really am because there were all these other symptoms in the way of being out of control, explosive, self-centered, you know, I just expecting people to love me and stuff. And, you know, now I see that it'd be like saying I am so terrible because my nose is running from this cold. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. And so I come in here And I look at, you know, I listen to other people. Yeah, we're all like this. Guess what? We all do this stuff. We just don't all do it at the same time. And you know what? It's not okay to do this other stuff. It's not. But that isn't who I am. Who I am today is, I'm the same everywhere I go. In the store, I mean, you know. So I've come a long way. This life is so much different than the way I lived before. And, yeah, I've made my amends. My step five, I had a white light moment. But you couldn't really tell because it was daylight. But I had a white light moment. And then I do feel like I've had a psychic change sufficient to remove the desire to overeat, which is what I needed. I needed a power greater, strong enough and sufficient to help me. And to, you know, I had to open up to other people and spill my guts. And guess what? My house got clean. I mean, it's like I start, you know, things start to become manageable when the food's in order, because it's an eating disorder, you know. So having my food in order, having a emotionally balanced life, yeah, I got explosive last month. People weren't doing what I wanted, and I get really bombastic, you know, and I think it's funny. Other people might not, but it all works out, whether I push things to go a certain way or people, you know. I used to have so much self-pity. Nobody loves me, you know. I wasn't doing lovable things. So anyway, it's a great program. If you're new, just, you know, work the steps in order as written. Read the big book a little at a time. Have somebody help you interpret like this meeting does, and you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. You're going to love yourself.
That's
you
fine,
will.
Kathy.
Thanks so much for letting me share. With that, I'll pass. Kathy J. in Illinois.
Well, thanks for wrapping us up, Kathy. All right. Well, thank you to everybody who shared and everybody who's out there. Can't have a meeting without you guys. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following the closing. So the share ID for today, January 21st, 2025, in case you want to listen again or share it with somebody, 22095, 22095. So we will now close with the reading from the big book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Rena L., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Sure. This is Rena L., recovered compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until